This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by Bellwether Games. Check out Bellwether Games online at bellwethergames.com and stay tuned for their Kickstarter for the latest expansion to their best-selling game, Antidote. Antidote Lab Alliance coming to Kickstarter this March.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Family Gamers. This is episode 37.
Yeah, we are here. It is episode 37 and I'm going to talk a lot tonight.
And I'm not going to talk very much. Not that that's much different than usual.
Wow. I don't even know how to answer that. I don't know what to say.
You talk more better than I do? More better.
Do I talk more better than she does? I just have no idea. So last weekend I was able to go to New York Toy Fair and I saw a whole lot of really interesting stuff. A lot of stuff that's coming out this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny. I was looking some stuff up before the show to get ready and I was trying to look on companies' websites to, you know, make sure I had the details right. And a lot of these games aren't even on their company's websites yet, which, you know,
sure,
I suppose
if they're not actually released and available to the public yet.
Right.
Makes
right,
sense.
Right. So I've got a lot of really cool stuff to talk about, which means that I'm going to be talking a lot second half of the show because that is our topic. So As is usual, I will on our, what did we do in the last week? Defer to you.
Okay. Well, this was February vacation. But the weather was gorgeous, so we didn't spend a whole lot of time inside playing games.
Yes, it was unseasonably pleasant.
It was very spring-like, almost early summery. And now all our snow has melted, and the buds are forming on the trees, just in time for us to get another cold snap and everything will die.
Well, that's dark. Okay.
A little bit. But we didn't spend a whole lot of time inside playing games. We did get a chance to play a game that's been in our review queue for a while, called Ark and Noah.
Yep. Yeah, Ark and Noah is a game that's a lot like Agricola.
Yeah, it's a resource management game. As you can tell by the name, it is heavily themed around the biblical story of Noah and the Ark.
Mm-hmm.
There can be up to four players, that being Noah and his three sons. Your whole goal is to build the Ark, fill it with animals, and make sure that the animals have food to eat.
And have the most victory points.
Well, yeah. But all of the progression and artwork is rainbow themed, which is also appropriate.
Okay.
It's all right. I mean,
well, we'll have a full review on the site.
We'll have a full review in a couple of weeks.
So we'll defer on that one. One thing I do like about that game is it has as kind of part of the game, there's two difficulty levels.
Yes.
So if you're playing with all adults, you can play kind of the harder way to play.
Or if you're playing with people who like more in-depth games.
Right. And if you're playing with kids or, you know, you want to have a more casual, light casual type game, you can play it the easy way.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's a good feature and it didn't really cost them any extra. It's just a little bit of extra, a couple extra rules.
Yeah.
To do that. So that was good.
Yep. We also played some of our favorites, Duple and Anomia.
Yep.
The kids have still been breaking out the Disney Infinity figurines when we would let them play inside and have screen time. And lots of Lego building on their part. Lots of Lego building.
I'm perfectly okay with that. They decided while I was gone to sort all the Legos into different colors.
Well, you know what part of it is? Part of it is that they've definitely kind of grokked the concept that really getting invested in doing something with Legos is going to take a lot of time.
That's fine with
me. And so it's not something they normally do when school's in session because, like, they get home from school and they have a snack and they want to watch a TV show and then it's dinner time. And then after dinner, there's more stuff that needs to be done. And so
sure.
Nothing's going to happen that it requires, like, an hour or two hours
and
involvement.
And while they're at school, there's a marauding 2.5-year-old that's hell-bent on destroying everything in the house.
Well, yes. That is why all of the completed Lego creations now live in our daughter's room, at least temporarily.
Right.
Where the 2-year-old can't get at them.
All right. What else did we play?
We also spent some time playing a bunch of games that you brought home from New York.
I did.
Ta-da!
Let's see. So we played a game from Hoyle, which I'll talk about later. We played a game from Blue Orange called Digity Doo, which I'll talk about.
Yeah, that was fun.
As well.
And we played Sushi Dice.
Yeah, we played Sushi Dice from Dude Games. Another thing I'll talk about later.
Yep.
So yeah, a lot of fun, and all of that stuff is going to get reviewed up on the site, so that should be pretty excellent.
Mm-hmm. What other news do we have? Our friends.
Our contributing writers.
Our friends and contributing writers, Ray and Liz, they came over and played those New York Toy Fair games with us.
Yep.
And took some of them home to write reviews. But right after they did that, then they headed out to a board gaming convention here in Massachusetts called TotalCon.
TotalCon!
Or Total Confusion.
Yep. So that was just this past weekend. I know that I did speak with Ray. And there's lots of cool stuff that's going to be coming out of that, too. So,
hooray!
Big year for the Family Gamers. It's going to be a lot of cool stuff this year.
Yeah, now we have like business cards and t-shirts and everything. It's great. We look all professional.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of professionalism, there's a lot of really cool business-related announcements that we can make this week. Number one, this episode of the podcast, as mentioned at the beginning of the show, is sponsored by Bellwether Games. And the reason why it's sponsored by Bellwether Games is because we have a... giveaway!
Yay, giveaway! We have a winner.
We have a winner of our giveaway, and we will share that with you as soon as we get back from our break. Oh, and before we actually take a break, a cool story. So at New York Toy Fair, I was helping out my friends in the Fox Mine booth, and I ran into, for the first time in 15 years, I haven't talked to him at all, my old college roommate.
Which one?
That would be my friend Brant. Brant is actually one of the podcast co-hosts for a podcast called The Portal, which just like
that's
we are
on the Dice Tower Network.
Exactly. Just like we are, The Portal podcast is on the Dice Tower Network. So we are members of the Dice Tower Network. I highly recommend you check them out. You can go to dicetower.com and click on podcasts and go to Dice Tower Network.
All right. That's cool.
So it was really cool to see him. He looks completely different from the way he looked in college, and now he's married and has a daughter and all this crazy stuff.
Well, you also look somewhat different and are married and have three children.
Life has gone on. I get that. But it was a bizarre thing to randomly run into him and to realize that we're both affiliated with the same group. It was just very, very crazy. But
neat.
So we had something in common, and now we have something in common again. So thanks to the Dice Tower Network.
All right.
And
thank you, Dice Tower.
I guess that's pretty much going to be... it, and we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back, and we will share our winner.
We will announce the winner of the giveaway,
and then
you can talk a
whole
lot.
All Toy Fair, all the time.
All right. And we're back. The first thing, as promised, we will announce the winner of the giveaway of the Princess and the Goblin book and game.
Prize pack.
Yes.
Sponsored by the Family Gamers and Bellwether Games.
Drum roll, please. Our winner is Scott Nordine.
So congratulations, Scott. We will publish this on the website once the podcast has gone live.
Yep.
And if we don't hear from you in a day or two, we'll email you. But hopefully,
please contact us
on the show. Please reach out to us,
and we will mail you your stuff.
Yep. You can tweet us, Facebook us. Where can they tweet us?
You can tweet us at Family Gamers AA.
Yep. Or you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Family Gamers AA. Or you can just email us.
Yeah. Pretty much anything at thefamilygamers.com.
Yep.
We'll eventually filter through.
Just email Anitra. Yeah. She'll deal with it. It'll be great.
Fine. Anitra at thefamilygamers.com.
All right.
Tell me about Toy Fair.
It was exhausting. So I went down to New York City, and I strongly suspect that in the 3 days that I was in New York, I walked more than I had walked the entire year of 2017 up until that point.
And that's even including like going to Colorado and walking up and down a mountain skiing. And,
I mean, there was a lot of walk. I walked almost like 2/3 of the length of Manhattan one night. So, it was brutal.
Wow.
That place is really big. If any of you have been to PAX Prime or PAX East, the convention center at PAX East is bigger than the one at PAX Prime. So if you've been to Prime, just understand that. And the convention center in Boston for PAX East is 531,000 square feet. The Javits Center in New York City is 1.8 million square feet.
Wow.
It is a truly immense facility.
Four of those would almost fit inside.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah.
And it was completely packed for Toy Fair. So it was a pretty tremendous experience. I got to meet a lot of cool people, talk to, you know, publishers and developers and designers and all this stuff. All right. I'm going to say the highlight of Toy Fair for me was meeting Debbie Sterling. She is the inventor of Goldieblocks.
Oh, we love Goldieblocks.
And that was really cool to just kind of chat with her for a little bit. And she has a new four-month-old baby boy named Miles. Super cute, I know. But just like in terms of like celebrity designer thing, I got to meet her and that was cool.
Yeah.
I actually walked by Justin Gary, who's the guy who created Ascension and Soulforge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was demoing something and I kind of was like, oh, yeah, I recognize him. How scary is that?
That's a little scary.
Yeah. And I kind of filed it in the back of my head like, oh, I got to go, you know, go talk to Justin later because I had met him at PAX Prime. And I never got around to doing it, so that was a bummer. And then I found out on Monday that on Sunday, Bindi Irwin was in the Animal Kingdom at the Animal Planet booth.
Oh, man.
Like, for a couple hours. So that was a total bummer that I missed that one. But, you know, I had a really great time, and I met a ton of people, and we made some great connections with the Family Gamers. So
it's okay.
So it's okay. I'll survive.
All right. Well, you already mentioned Goldieblocks.
Yep.
What else did you see?
So on our last show, we talked about the like educational games that are not educational or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the companies that we talked about a lot was ThinkFun.
Yeah.
ThinkFun is a company that picked up Robot Turtles. We had picked it up on Kickstarter, but they're the ones who actually licensed that game. So if you were to pick up a copy based on our or anybody else's recommendation, most likely it's going to be published by ThinkFun.
Yeah, through ThinkFun.
They're kind of like a direct competitor of GameRaid, who we love.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of these kinds of like thinky kids games.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a really good job. I mean, their stuff is really well geared towards that market. They've done a great job of diversification. They have that cool game where you can like compose music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Compose yourself. So I got a chance to meet with them and I talked to their social media manager.
Ooh.
They actually do some guest blogging. So they'll have internet bloggers guest blog on the ThinkFun website, and sometimes they'll have ThinkFun people guest blog on other people's websites as well. So hopefully we're going to do something in the future around that.
Cool.
They were pretty cool people. Moving on.
All right. What else?
I met the people over at Playroom Entertainment.
What is that? That is something I have not heard of.
Well, you've heard of Unspeakable Words.
Yes, yep. I have.
So Unspeakable Words is a Cthulhu-based, an elder gods, thank you, based like vocabulary game, like a letter tycoon or something.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about Unspeakable Words is that every time you spell out a word with your cards, you get points based on, first of all, you get points based on the angles of the letters.
Okay.
Right? Because the angles are bad in that universe. But the bigger the word, the more difficult it is because you have to roll a d20. And you have to pass, like, a sanity score.
Oh.
So the bigger the word is, the higher the sanity score is going
to be. It's like a risk-reward. You'll get more points,
exactly.
But you're more likely to lose your sanity.
Exactly. And the cool thing about that is that it naturally leads itself to balancing a game out between people of different, like, vocabulary
levels.
Because if you're just making, you know, 3, 4, 5-letter words every time, that's okay because you're more likely to stay sane.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that in the long run, you'll actually do okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for us, when we talk about things like rule shifting a lot, I don't know how I feel about my kids and the whole elder god thing.
Yeah.
But
other people are okay with it. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't even really bother me all that much as long as my kids are grounded, which
they are.
But that was kind of a neat, as I was looking at the game and talking to the guy who was presenting it to me, and I was kind of, I mean, I had heard it's actually, they did play it on tabletop. So
yeah, that I remember seeing it there
and do a search for tabletop and Unspeakable Words. You'll actually see the game there. But it kind of, I realized as he was kind of talking through the mechanics, like this is something that kind of almost self balances in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. They had another game, which is almost like a series that you buy into, I guess.
Okay.
Called it's the Killer Bunnies series, and the one that they had kind of on display was the Killer Bunnies and the Quest for the Magic Carrot.
Okay. Tell me about this. It sounds fun from the name.
Yeah. So it's got this kind of like crazy looking bunny on the front. He's a killer bunny. And I guess the easiest way for me to describe this. So the goal of the game is to get the magic carrot, right? And so you're playing cards. You can play like equipment and stuff to kind of like beef up your bunnies.
Sure.
But also you're killing the other player's bunnies. So it is violent. But it's like cartoon violence, and it's like over the top, ridiculous violence.
Sure,
right. So I kind of imagine,
you know, run away.
Yeah, I guess Monty Python is almost like the when you think about the rabbit in Monty Python, and
right.
It's just like it jumps up and the dude's head falls off. Like it's ridiculous violence. Like that's kind of how this game is. And so definitely, this is a game that's going to be dependent on your comfort level. With your family and your kids or whatever, and whoever's playing this, I don't think this game is for everyone.
Right. But if you already have kids who pretend to chop each other's heads off, then you're probably okay.
You know, when you say it like that, it sounds really dark.
I'm just saying, like, it's my less sexist way of trying to say that if you have boys, you'll probably be fine.
I guess.
Because in my observation of young boys, they tend to be just like, I chopped your arm off. I chopped your leg off. Okay. And well, I chopped your head off and now you're dead.
Right. So, I mean, so it's cartoon morbidity. And I don't want to understate it because it's definitely a key part of the game.
Sure.
But if you're okay with that, it looked pretty fun. So.
All right. Anything else from them?
So this company, Playroom Entertainment, is probably best known for, they've got these party games called Geek Out, and they've got like Geek Out Party and, you know, Geek Out Family. They're coming out with a Geek Out Big Bang Theory, which is all about
Big Bang Sheldon Theory stuff, and the gang.
Yeah. Whatever. So one thing that they were doing is they were giving away like little samplers.
Okay.
And so I
see cards in your hand.
Just for kicks, I'm going to ask you some questions and we'll see if you can get the answers.
Okay.
You ready?
And for our listening audience, no, I have not seen these cards at all. So,
actually, they're not. They're, you have to name X. That's how these work. So, what I'll do is I will let you pick a color.
What are my choices?
Red, blue, yellow, green, or black?
Black.
And I'll let you pick one of these cards. She's picking a card at random. Okay, that's your card. Okay. So, what you need to do is you need to name for me. Oh, this is easy. Two McDonald's menu items.
Chicken nuggets and Big Mac.
Yep. Or the Grand Mac or the Little Big Mac. Or Le Big Mac.
You only said two.
I know. All right, do another
one. Filet-O-Fish.
Okay, what color?
We'll go with blue this time.
Blue. Here we go. You need to name six TV dads.
All right. Homer.
That's the first one I came up with, too.
Hey, so come on. It is what it is.
Yep.
As my mind suddenly goes blank. I'm coming up with like last names or actor names, and I'm not coming up with the actual TV dads.
What about Jack from This Is Us?
Okay, sure. Yep, Jack from This Is Us would be a TV dad.
Yep.
Modern TV dad.
Randall. He's got kids.
Also fair.
From This Is Us.
Also from This Is Us. All right. I'm glad you're helping me because my mind is totally going blank. So that puts us at three.
How about Bryan Cranston from Malcolm in the Middle? What's his name? I don't know what his name is.
Yeah, I'm trying to... I'm sure they must give him a name at some point, but also
he's
dad.
At this game is the moral of the story.
Fred Flintstone is a TV dad.
That's fair. Sure.
I figured I'd go with what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Wayne.
With Damian Wayne, sure.
With Damian Wayne, all right, see? All right. Then totally, he's not really dead.
So
but yeah.
Like, these are the kinds of questions, and it's kind of fun stuff. And I thought it was neat. One other thing that was super cool about Toy Fair was the booth that I was helping out in was right next to the booth for Mayfair.
Cool.
Mayfair, if you don't know, is a pretty big publisher in the board game space.
Since you say the booth you were helping out at... Props to Foxmind.
Yes, thank you very much to Foxmind.
Who had Andrew come and help, and also then just let him have free reign of
I probably helped a couple hours a day and mostly walked around the show floor. But they were excellent. Shout out to Phil. He was great. And JC, also great. And Tomas. Good time.
All right.
A lot of fun. I got to demo There's a game called Match Madness, which I want to get my hands on. It's almost like a domino style game. It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
And then I've mentioned Sports Dice Baseball before, but I've been kind of guarded about it because I didn't know when it was coming out.
But now it's actually been picked up, right?
Yeah, it's coming out in May. So this is a game by our friend Andy Jeremiah, who made Maze Racers. We've had Andy on the show before. This is a game where basically it's a two-player game. Each player has six dice. One is the pitcher, one is the batter, and you roll dice. And then whichever result you have the most of, you kind of present to the opponent. And whoever has more.
And that kind of determines your offense, defense.
Exactly.
Sort of thing.
And you play three innings or whatever.
And I'm hoping maybe we can have Andy back on the show once the sports dice baseball is out, so he can talk about it a little more.
I think they'll be willing to do a sponsorship again.
Awesome.
Well, not again. Actually, they did before. They
sponsored Maze Racers. Yeah.
And so we will definitely do a giveaway of sports dice baseball. So that's going to be pretty awesome. All right. So back to Mayfair. So I went over and I kind of chatted up the guys over at Mayfair, and I saw a cool game that is already out. And I heard about a cool game that is going to be coming out.
Okay.
Both of them are two-player games, which we like.
We like two-player because you and I, often the only people we have to play games with that are complicated games, is each other.
Right. So Mayfair Games publishes Agricola. They publish Patchwork.
Okay.
They publish... they used to publish Catan. They just sold the rights to Asmodee.
Oh.
For Catan. Yep.
Wow.
So yeah, they're a pretty significant player in that space. We've talked a lot on the show about All Creatures Big and Small, which is the two-player variant.
The Agricola, yeah.
And we love it.
Yes, it is so well balanced.
That is getting reprinted this year.
Good.
So if you are interested in that game, it's going to get reprinted this year, which probably means it's going to be like, I'm guessing like $30. Right? Because it's a little
reasonable guess, yeah.
So they also make a game called Caverna. I don't know if you've ever heard of Caverna.
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
It's like a cave-based, more complicated version of Agricola.
Okay.
Right. And they're making a two-player variant of that as well. It's called Cave versus Cave or something. Cave on Cave. I can't remember the name of it. And that was one of the games I couldn't find on the net.
Okay. Fair enough.
So they are making that, and that's going to be cool. The game that is out now that I got to play and I really enjoyed is a game called Fight for Olympus.
Okay.
Fight for Olympus is a game where one of the Greek gods has died or something like that, and so you are fighting with your opponent to get to Mount Olympus and become the next god.
Interesting.
Okay.
All right.
And it has like kind of a mix between Magic the Gathering in a very basic way and Soulforge.
Okay.
So in Soulforge, one of the things that you do as you fight with your opponent is you kind of slot creatures across from each other do things. And so in this game, you have kind of elements that you have to use to kind of cast, so to speak, these creatures that you slot against each other. If your thing is not defended, there's almost like a balance token that kind of swings towards you or away from you. And if your creature's not being blocked, then that balance token is going to be moved more into your favor. And if that thing ever gets all the way to the end, all the way to a certain threshold, then you have won. And there's a few other things that are kind of going on during the game. The art is gorgeous. I mean, it's kind of this classic Greek looking art.
Grecian looking, yeah.
The game looks great. I mean, it's really pretty basic. I think our 8-year-old could play this game.
Okay.
Like, it's not complicated.
Sure, sure.
But it's very pretty, and I liked it a lot.
Okay.
And I kind of want to buy it. So that's Fight for Olympus by Mayfair Games. Highly recommend you check that out. Let's see. Then I did a lot of walking. I met the president of Mayday Games. They publish Walk the Plank.
I love Walk the Plank.
Yep. probably their most famous game is a game called Get Bit, which is a game where basically everybody is trying to...
That's sort of similar to Walk the Plank in that everybody is trying to sort of push each other back or down to be the last survivor.
You're trying to get away from a shark, no matter how you can do it, even if it involves like knocking people back to do it. they also have a game called Dead Man's Draw, which is this kind of like press your luck game where the whole point is to get more booty than all of your opponents.
Okay.
they had a lot of interesting things at the show. They do a lot of stuff on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So if you were to Google Mayday Games, you would find probably some Kickstarter references in there. So we had a great talk. I think we might be working together sometime this year as well.
Nice.
I like them a lot. Moving along. I think it was when we were talking about two-player games that we mentioned Mastermind.
It was either two-player or travel games. Yeah,
maybe travel games. And how our 8-year-old and our 6-year-old like fell in love with Mastermind, and I was completely flabbergasted by this.
Well, and I love that it was a game that we were able to show them once, mm-hmm. and then the two of them just took off with.
Right.
And I sometimes will get up in the morning on a school day, no less, and just find the two of them playing Mastermind out in the living
room.
It's
so weird.
And be like, all right, guys.
You get dressed first.
You got to go get dressed and get ready for school. I know you're playing the game.
I love it. I love that they're playing together quietly. It's great. So as I was walking the show floor, I saw the Pressman sign. Pressman is...
That's Mastermind. Yeah.
Mastermind. And I went over and I talked to them. So that's now Goliath Games. Now Goliath owns the Pressman brand. So I walked around in the booth and I saw a bunch of their stuff. They have a game called Smath. Have you ever heard of this game? Apparently it's been out for a while. Yeah. S-M-A-T-H.
No.
It's basically Scrabble, but with math and arithmetic, right?
Ooh.
So yeah, you can get numbers or like multiplication, addition, subtraction symbols, equal symbols, ooh. And you can play Scrabble with it.
That sounds way more up my alley than actual Scrabble.
So I mean, I wasn't like, you know, stunned, blown away, but I did see it and I thought it was pretty cool. Moving right along. I talked to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I'm actually skipping a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
This is the highlights for the sake of time. One company that I knew going in that I really wanted to check out was Blue Orange Games. So Blue Orange makes New York 1901.
Yep.
Great game. They make Brave Rats.
Yep.
Great game. Battlesheep.
Oh, great love game. Battlesheep. We last need to get year, a copy of Battlesheep.
Last year they released Dr. Eureka. Okay.
Okay.
Sort of a STEM. Well, it's ostensibly a STEM game. It's not really a STEM game. But it is a logic puzzle. Okay. So Dr. Eureka is a game where you have a series of test tubes, right? And different colored balls. And what you have to do, it's like that tower stacking thing, kind of, is you have to figure out how to move the balls around to match
a card.
So a card would have a set of test tubes with different colors in different orders.
Okay.
And you've got to kind of...
So you got to start with them in a certain order, and then you got to figure out how to get them into a different...
I don't know in a certain order. I'm not entirely clear on that.
In a different way. So
you've got to move them around.
So it's both a logic puzzle and a little bit of a dexterity game, because mm-hmm. like doing balls from tube to tube takes more skill and effort than something like a towers game where you're just picking up a disc and putting it down.
And they had like a giant version with these giant like test tubes that I couldn't even wrap my fingers all the way around. And the tolerances on those were super tight, so if you didn't pour the ball in just right, it wouldn't go down. It was
weird. Yeah.
But one thing that two things. They announced two new games kind of in that series. One of them called Dr. Microbe, and one of them called Dr. Beaker.
Okay.
Now, I have the catalog here for these, and you've never seen these before, right?
Nope.
Okay. So I'm going to show you this picture of Dr. Beaker while mm-hmm. I kind of explain this.
Okay.
And you can kind of help me explain it.
All right.
As we go along.
I'll do what I can.
Okay. So Dr. Beaker, you have a classic Erlenmeyer flask, right? If you don't know what an Erlenmeyer flask is, it's someone with it's got a flat bottom and then...
Tapered sides and...
You know, sides and taper
a narrow
up, and then,
mouth.
And then kind of a narrow top. And the way Dr. Beaker works is there's a ring inside the flask that spins around, and there's little balls in the ring. And there's a sort of a center ring, and what you have to do is you have this like glass, it's not really glass, it's plastic, but it's like
a stirring rod,
and you have to stick it in there and use it to spin this ring with balls in it around. And then that thing in the middle has one open slot. So you're moving this thing, and then you have to get that one ball in so that you can move them around.
Okay.
It's basically
a
more annoying version of Dr. Eureka.
Simpler to solve, but takes more fine motor skills.
It's obnoxious because you've got to stick the rod in there and put it on the ring and move the ring around. So that's Dr.
Dr. Beaker.
Beaker.
But what's this Dr. Microbe over here?
Dr. Microbe. So each person has a Petri dish.
And so the other ones look like they're single player games.
They're not. They're ish. They're not.
Okay.
So you have a Petri dish, and the Petri dish is divided into four sections. One of them is half of the Petri dish, mm-hmm. and then the other three is thirds of the other half.
Okay.
You follow me?
Yeah.
So like one half looks like pizza pie slices, and the other half is just
so half. It's divided into 3/6 and 1/2.
Exactly. Okay. So that's your Petri dish to start, and you have a little pair of plastic tweezers.
Okay.
And there's a kind of a cup in the middle of the table mm-hmm. with all of these different microbes in it.
Yeah.
And you flip over a card, and the card will show you three of the four microbes, most likely. And so what you need to do is you need to pick up the correct ones and put them in the right places.
Yep.
And then you need to deduce what the super microbe is, which is...
Oh, yeah. It says here, the super bug must always be a different shape and color than the other three microbes in your dish.
Right. So you can look at the shapes that are in your Petri dish once you've done what's on the card. Mm-hmm. And then you have mm-hmm. to figure out what's left, both in color and in
shape. Both in color and in shape.
And get that.
Okay.
And then put that in your...
Okay, that makes sense. That, you know what, that's a good kid game.
It's a deduction game, is what it is.
Yeah.
With some dexterity built in.
Yeah.
Didn't blow me away.
Well, I mean, it's one of those, like, I can see why, because as an adult, you kind of look at this and be like, this is just making something difficult for the purpose of making it difficult.
Right.
But...
I don't feel like that's good game design. I mean, I don't want to blast on Blue Orange. I think that there's another game that they released, which actually I'm kind of interested in.
But for a kid, this can be just the right combination of dexterity and deduction.
I guess I feel like there's better deduction games.
It depends. It depends on what you're going for. I mean, my personal favorite in this vein is going to be Set.
Mm-hmm.
But there's plenty of other games out there that are also good.
So, we're going to talk about it in a minute. That's because it's coming up. But Didgeridoo is more interesting deduction to me, and I think that a kid could still do it. And
it's keeping track of a lot more pieces in your mind at once.
I guess I don't know. I wasn't blown away by it. I felt like Dr. Eureka was a much better kind of original idea.
And sure,
this isn't enough of a step. It's like a half step for me.
Okay.
So I wasn't in love with it. I wouldn't mind playing it more.
Sure.
That's kind of where I'm at on Dr. Microbe.
It's not designed for you.
And Dr. Beaker. I know it's not. I know it's not designed for me. So, I mean, maybe that's it. But I did see another game there, which I really liked a lot, which was called Clear for Takeoff.
I saw that when you showed me the catalog a little bit earlier. It looked neat. It just a conceptually neat. It's got a game board with, looks like, four or five different sections,
yep.
and looks like a runway
mm-hmm.
with a little turn in it. So looks like you're playing cards to get your planes taxied around and onto the runway so that they can take off.
Right. So there's four kind of stages on the board for each of your planes. Each player has a small, medium, and large plane.
Okay.
And so the goal of the game is to have all three of those planes take off.
Okay.
Right. So you play certain cards, which will allow... You know, maybe it's move one of your planes to the baggage loading area.
Okay.
Right? And so you do that. There's also kind of like board effect cards. Like, oh, there's fog, so no medium or small planes can take off.
But large planes can because they have radar.
Because they have, you know, whatever.
Or whatever.
You know, there's geese in the area, so no large planes can take off. You know, stuff
okay.
like that.
Okay.
So there's kind of these effect cards that, you know, so if you look and somebody's got their large plane and they're getting close to taking off, but you haven't moved your small plane up yet, you could play a card that would restrict that large plane from being able to move forward
while you
kind of get your other stuff going.
Okay.
So
cool.
I thought that was kind of a neat game. I think there's some logical deduction in there that I think is a little bit more interesting to me.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe it's just because it's a little bit more strategy and a little bit less like straight deduction.
Yeah, it is.
But I think that game looked really, really cool, and I was kind of excited about that.
Okay.
And I mentioned that Didgeridoo game.
Yes.
And so Didgeridoo is a game that is published by Blue Orange, but it wasn't in the Blue Orange booth.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because I had a chance to talk to this lady, Gail Wood. Lovely.
Okay.
She's the executive director of the United Healthcare Children's Foundation.
Okay.
Which is kind of this cool group. And what they do is they're a nonprofit organization, and mm-hmm. they raise money so that they can offset the cost for maybe kids that don't really have, like their families don't have enough money to get critical care that they need, or
sure.
they need to have surgery, and maybe the insurance will cover the surgery, but the parents want to stay nearby, but they can't afford a hotel, so mm-hmm, you know, they'll mm-hmm. help pay for those kinds of things. So it's a really cool organization, and one of the things that they do to raise money is they sell children's books and they sell board games.
Okay, that's a neat, like, that I can see how that would dovetail nicely, because they're going right for the stuff that the same kids that they serve would also enjoy.
Right. Yeah. And so in talking with them, they actually gave me a bunch of stuff, and I was like, wow. So they gave me a children's book, which I've already read to our kids,
yep.
which is kind of all about doing the right thing. And
by the way, our two-year-old keeps asking for it now.
Good.
But he doesn't want me to read it to him. He only wants you to read it to him.
Aw, that's cute. He did hand it to me tonight, but you had already read it.
I had already read him a different book. And he said, but Daddy book. I did feel
badly about that.
Yeah.
So the art is cute and adorable. It's a children's book. But they also make games. And one of the games that they made is this game called Didgeridoo.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about it? You've played Didgeridoo.
I've
talked a lot. So tell me about Didgeridoo.
So this is one of the games we played with Ray and Liz mm-hmm. When they were over earlier this week. Didgeridoo is a deduction game. It's also kind of mathy. It reminds me in many ways of Racco. For anyone who's played Racco, which is a game that's been out for, I don't know, 50 years or more. The idea of you have a whole bunch of numbers and you're doing the best you can to put them in order. Smallest to largest. The difference in Didgeridoo is that everybody is getting the same numbers at the same time.
Right.
But once you basically write them down on your little pad that has 20 spots for mm-hmm. numbers. But once you've written them down, you cannot move them. So you're always trying to guess, well, you know, if I put this too close to one end or the other, then maybe I'm going to run out of room. And your goal in Didgeridoo is to make longer unbroken sequences of numbers, or unbroken chains of numbers, right. shall we
so
say.
The longer the chain, the more points it's
the
worth.
The more points it's
and
worth.
And it's not like 5 is worth 5 and 6 is worth 6. It's like five is worth 10 and 6 is worth 15 or something.
Yeah.
So
a chain of 2 is worth 1 point. A chain of 3 is worth 3 points. And then, like, I think, I think 5 is 10 points, 6 is 15. Yeah. In theory, you could get an entire chain of 20, but right. we found out just how difficult that is. We played it twice, and both times at the beginning of the game, we're like, oh, whatever, this is going to be easy. And we can figure this out with deduction and math, because we're all
engineer people.
We're three engineer people and a music person who's also mathy and into games. So like we can get this. And then as your spaces start to fill up, you start to go, well, if I put it over here, but if I put it over here, and very minor changes can
have
huge effects and totally blow you out of the water.
There are, and a lot of the numbers in the middle are, there's duplicate tiles.
Yes. So you have 20 spots, but the numbers are 1 to 30 with doubles of everything between 11 and 19.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there's one wild tile, which we never drew in our two games.
So anyway... So Didgeridoo,
it was
fun. I don't know if it was surprisingly fun.
I would say it was surprisingly
it was
fun
surprising
because
how difficult it got at the end.
Because when we started off, I was kind of like, whatever. It's a number game. We put them in order. We're all doing the same strategy at the same time. Like, this is not going to be that interesting. And then all of a sudden, it was.
Right.
In the last like 5 numbers, all of a sudden it gets interesting and challenging right away. But I'm going to guess, looking at it, part of the reason for this particular design is that it's very easy to keep it sanitary.
Mm-hmm.
You have
pages are disposable.
The the actual pages that you're playing with are disposable. You're going to write on them and throw them away.
And the tiles are plastic.
The tiles are plastic and can be washed. Even the little board we were laying the tiles out on is at least wiped clean. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty neat. I think they also gave you a little Spot It game.
Yeah, it's a Spot It, standard Spot It.
Yeah.
But it's in a mesh bag, so the mesh bag can be thrown in the wash or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's a coating on the actual discs, the Spot It discs, mm-hmm. they're little circles, that they can be washed too.
Like, neat.
I don't think you could throw them in a washing machine, but you can certainly
wipe them off. Yeah.
Clean them, you know, because you're in a... Kids can be in the hospital, and they really, you know, there's hospital acquired infections and all this stuff, and blah 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 blah. And I don't want to talk about work.
but so I thought it was neat both coming up with games that were good and interesting, but also worked really well for that hospital environment.
Right. So they're doing great work.
Yeah.
Yeoman's work. All right. So moving on. There's a lot
more
of this.
People.
I think we're already running a little long, so I think just brace yourselves. It's going to be a long show.
All right. We'll try to pick up the pace a little bit.
Maybe we'll take a second break.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah, we're really mixing it up. I went to Iello.
Okay.
Familiar with Iello?
I've always called them Iello.
Iello?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it is Iello. I'm not really sure.
I-E-L-L-O.
King of Tokyo, King of New York, those are kind of the big games. Mm-hmm. They made Kanagawa, which came out last year, which is this like gorgeous Asian-inspired game. They were showing a game called The Mysterious Forest. This is a game that I want to play with our children.
Okay.
Basically, it's a cooperative game against the board. So everybody is working together to kind of complete this story. And it's this combination of memory and like pseudo-strategy. So the way the game starts is there's a series of cards, which are kind of like a storyboard.
Okay.
And you flip them all over so you can see the items on them. Mm-hmm. Okay. And think... And so these are items that you're going to be putting in your backpack.
Okay.
Right? So you have, whatever, a minute to look at them all. You can't write anything down, but you're just looking at all these cards.
Okay.
Then you flip them over, and then you go and you fill your backpack with the items you need.
Okay.
Okay. So you can kind of think about like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, you know how they had items that like had certain purposes?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that kind of thing. You also get a certain number of these like spirit tokens, and I don't remember the name of the spirit, but we're going to call him Stitch just for, because he kind of looked like Stitch.
All right.
And as you go along in the game, there are opportunities where you can ask Stitch for help. And when you flip over that token.
Oh, Toodles.
Exactly. Exactly.
I've watched too much Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Yeah,
there's like three items, and you can choose one of those three items and take it from the reserve and put it in your backpack.
Okay.
And you better hope it helps you complete whatever that thing is. But then you go along, and there's certain like rewards and stuff that you get as you move further along. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually play it. It was just explained to me.
Sure.
And then at the end, you fight, you know, the monster who has the set of items that it needs to complete it as well. And so there's kind of a story that goes along with this whole thing, and... You can vary the difficulty by varying the number of cards that are in play, so you hit the quantity of stuff that you have to remember. Cool game, great art, seems like a lot of fun. There's a memory component, there's a little bit of a strategy component with when you use those spirit tokens. I really liked it. It looked like something that would be fun to play.
So keep your eyes out for Mysterious Forest by Iello.
Right. So that's a game that our 6-year-old and our 8-year-old could play.
Totally.
But then I went to Winning Moves Games, and I saw a bunch of stuff there, and I saw this one game that I landed on that is perfect for our 2.5-year-old.
Oh, that always gets me interested.
Nibbled.
Okay.
Okay. Nibbled is a game, and I'm going to show you a picture of it, so everybody is going to get the real-world audio reaction of Anitra checking out Nibbled.
Okay. Have never seen this before.
This is Nibbled.
Oh, those are cute.
Yes. So there's these little plastic fish.
Yeah, they're the big plastic fish clips.
Yeah. So you squeeze the tail and it opens up. So the way Nibbled starts is everybody clips four of these little fish onto themselves.
Okay.
And then you flip over a card. Well, and then you guess a color of fish.
Okay.
And you flip over a card.
Okay.
And however many fish of that color are on your card.
Yep.
You get to take a fish off of you and put it on someone else. And the object is to get rid of your fish.
That's pretty adorable.
You tell me that our 2.5-year-old would not think it was the most hysterical thing in the world to clip a fish on someone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
I mean, he would be in stitches on the floor.
Yeah. It would take him a little bit to get to the actual rules of why he was allowed to clip a fish sometimes and not other times. Sure. But just that concept, and other preschoolers I know as well. I mean, really, the target age range for this is like 3 and 4 year olds.
Yeah, but, absolutely. Right. Well, I mean,
but yeah,
color. Like they. So yeah. The thing
it's a color and a little bit of counting.
Yep.
Yep. All right.
So yeah, so that's Nibble.
That's
I thought
cute.
That game was super cute.
Very
I thought
cute.
You would like that. Then I went over to Habba.
We talked a lot about Habba in our
they
last
make
show.
A lot of great yep. stuff. They make Zitternix or Keep It Steady. They make Rhino Hero. They did not have Rhino Hero Deluxe there, or not Deluxe. It's like Rhino Hero Party or whatever it's
super
called.
Super Rhino Hero.
Super,
I don't know.
I don't remember what it's called, but they didn't have it. They didn't have it there. It
whatever.
But they did have a bunch of stuff that really did not look like Habba stuff. I mean,
so it wasn't big chunky wood pieces and primary colors.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Habba is like their art is usually pretty basic. It's functional. It gets the job done. There's nothing wrong with it.
It's basic cartoony.
You don't
kids
look at Habba art and you're like, whoa, this is gorgeous. But they had a bunch of games that were like fully illustrated games. It was very weird. One of them that I checked out was called Legends of Cascara. And there's like treasure in the middle, and the weird thing is each player has a scaled griffin and some kind of like cliff cat crawling thing.
Okay.
And you're trying to move both of them up to get to the treasure. They have different tracks.
Okay.
And you're trying to get both of them up to get treasure. So you kind of have to balance your moves. Before the other players get their guys up and they take the treasure too. So it was an interesting game, but it really struck me that it was... When I think of... It's not what I think of when I think of Habba.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out.
Habba games are fun, but they're usually not beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're fun and they're functional and they do a great job and I really enjoy them.
And there's nothing wrong with the art style. Wrong, right? But yeah.
So keep an eye out for yellow background, red letters, Habba on games that don't look like Habba games.
All right. Fair enough.
Then I met a guy at Dude Games. Dude Games is a new publisher in the States. It's this guy. He started this company basically because some Canadian publishers were looking for distribution into the United States, and they didn't really have an avenue for it. So he kind of
so he's like,
Dude Games,
all right, now I'm gonna be your avenue.
Right.
All right.
And so they've got a couple of games coming out. The first one is a game called Sushi Dice.
And that one we played here at home.
Played here at home.
It was pretty. Pretty good.
It was fine. Yeah. Our co-writers will have a review. Our contributing writers will have a review of that.
Yep.
Coming up pretty soon, so we'll just move on.
Yep.
Went over to Education Outdoors.
Okay.
This company publishes Toasted or Roasted.
I remember Toasted and Roasted from Boston Fig last year.
Right.
Yeah.
So you met the designer of
I Roasted. Did, yes.
Jeff Johnson.
He's also the designer of Flashlights and Fireflies that Game Right publishes.
And Moonquake Escape.
I remember seeing that game too at Boston
different.
Fig. Yes.
Yes.
Well, that's much more. It's much more, I guess, adult in theme. Mm-hmm. Grown up.
Grown up.
Yeah. Grown up.
We should use the word grown up. It's much more better. But they had a couple of games that were really interesting. One of them was I think it was called The Camp Game, and basically the whole purpose of this game is that all of the players are trying to get back to the campsite so the family could be together.
Okay.
At the fire. And you move by answering questions. So you draw these cards, and each card has four questions on it.
So this is like a Trivial Pursuit kind of thing? Sort of?
No, because they're not different categories. They're just different levels of difficulty, and they're all thematically associated.
Okay, so each card is one topic, but then different levels
bears.
Of difficulty on the question.
Yeah, it's like the topic is bears, and the top question is like, what is it that bears do in the winter so you don't see them, right? But the bottom question is like, what is the genus of the grizzly bear or something like that? So the difficulty levels go up. And the whole point here is that, okay, so we're going to play with our kids. Kids are going to answer the top level questions. We're going to answer the level four questions, right?
Okay.
So it's got rule shifting built into the game.
Okay. Always good.
It was awesome.
Always good.
The game is so good that Schwinn, one of the execs at Schwinn,
the bike company,
yes, saw the game, saw it demoed, played the game, and said, "I want you to make a bike version."
Okay, then.
So there's the bike game, which is just like the camp game. So if you like bikes.
But bike themed.
Yep. It's got Schwinn logos all over it.
Well, rather unsurprisingly. Kind of makes sense.
He also made a game, and this is for parents, called The Snipe Hunt.
The Snipe Hunt.
Did I tell you about this?
Yes, you did.
So
I love the idea.
Yeah. So there's a plastic base, and there's these two plastic-looking things that are snipes, and they don't make any noise when they're on the base. They don't do anything. They go to quote unquote go to sleep when they're on the base.
Okay.
You take one off the base. It's now charged. It's, you know, it has been charging while it's on the base, and you hide it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the kids have to find it.
Okay. And so far, sounds like a pretty typical, like,
after a certain amount of time, it starts to chirp a little bit.
Ah.
So the kids have to be quiet to listen for the chirping.
Ah. Yeah. Get some physical activity in there, but being
while being quiet. This is like God's greatest gift. And then after a little bit longer, like, its eyes flash and stuff like that. And eventually they find the thing and they have to bring it back and put it on the base. So you could hide both of them.
Ooh.
And have teams.
Yeah.
Right?
I like this idea. Yeah.
And that is exactly what it's for. And so we could be in another room playing a game like civilized adults while kids are quietly romping around the house trying to be quiet.
Yeah. Given the groups of kids that get together when we play games with other parents, I'm not sure it would be possible, but it's a nice idea.
Right. I also swung by the Klutz booth.
Klutz.
I didn't see any juggling stuff.
But that's
I know, right?
But that is Klutz.
Yeah. But they have a lot of craft stuff now. I think
they've had a lot of craft stuff forever.
Yeah.
Just saying.
They had
craft stuff when I was a kid.
Okay. They're licensing Lego now.
Really?
Yeah. So they had some kits to build simple machines.
Okay. Right? With Lego stuff.
With Legos. Right. All right. So it's a good kind of science educational thing where you're building like ramps and stuff like that. And so you're building simple machines. Another thing they have, which I thought was very, very clever, was they have basically a Lego stop motion kit.
Okay. Well, stop motion's becoming a big thing for kids.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes with Lego, there's another product out there. That's called like Stickman or something like that.
Okay,
that's sure. Specifically designed to like help kids learn how to do stop motion.
Yeah, I mean, we know some people who've done stop motion videos with Lego.
Well, yeah, and Lego is a perfect vehicle for that because everybody has them, and you can build whatever you want.
they've got a bunch of this really cool Lego license stuff.
Okay. Cool.
They have some really nice. Kind of multi-purpose art kits for little kids.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. So, you know, you could take some of the same core components, and sometimes you can make a fish with them, or an elephant, or, you know, some other animals. And stuff like that. It's well thought out craft stuff.
Klutz stuff generally is. Right. They definitely do a lot of research before they put their stuff out. Right.
Do you want to take another break?
This has been a long show. I think maybe we should take another short break.
All right. We'll be right back.
And we're back.
All right.
We got more games to talk about.
We've stretched. We're good to go. So we left off talking about Lego.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to come back and we're going to kind of talk about Lego again. But it's not going to be Lego.
We're going to talk about not Lego. Like Mega Bloks?
No. So I went to the Once Kids booth. And they are a company that makes toys for kids.
Okay.
That are like environmentally friendly.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big thing now.
Yeah.
Sure.
And one of the things that they're making are... wooden, not Legos.
Okay.
They fit in.
Do they actually have like the tolerances that Legos have?
Yeah. I mean, you can actually integrate them into Legos if you want to.
So as a parent who's spent time with both Legos and knockoff brands, in my experience, Mega Bloks is the only knockoff brand that manages to have the same tolerances and actually work together with Lego.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of amazing.
they're pretty good. I mean, look, they're made of organic material.
Right. So I'm sure they're not gonna have the same like click factor right. to them right. that the Legos
but,
do.
But the cool thing about this is because they're made of wood, mm-hmm. you can paint them or color them.
Mm.
So you could build something with some Craggle.
and the Craggle.
And then you could paint it. Right?
Sure.
Or you could build an effigy and light it on fire. Whatever you want to do.
I have a feeling these are expensive enough I would not want to light them on fire.
But they were nice. I mean, they went together cool. fine. They held together. You could tell that they didn't hold together quite as well as Legos do, which sure. is not a surprise. But sure. They were really nice, and they were nice people. So
cool.
Yep, so I like them.
That's a different idea.
Mm-hmm. Then
what else did you see?
I went to Gridley Games.
Okay.
Where I talked to Risa, who's, I can't pronounce her last name, so I'm not even going to try because it would be rude. But everything in the Gridley Games booth was designed by this one lady.
Okay.
And she...
Busy lady.
Yeah. She actually gave us a game to review called Wise Alec, which is a family trivia game.
Okay. So we will try that and get back to you all.
Yes. She had a lot of other like cool STEM stuff there. She had something called like Just Add Sun, which explored a lot of solar
all right.
energy effects and stuff like that. She had something called like Just Add Water, and then there was one called, I think, Just Add Milk or Just Add Glue or something like that. There was a couple of those, but that was kind of the theme, the Just Add X
sure.
theme. And she had a whole bunch of other stuff that kind of explored the solar system and
like there, science like experimenty kind of things.
And she had some really nice logic games as well. So it's very simple, straightforward stuff, but I think the foundation was good there.
All right, cool.
Okay, now I'm going to talk about the Creativity Hub.
Okay, what's Creativity Hub?
So I mentioned that I met Debbie Sterling, and that was awesome.
Yes.
I also met another game celebrity.
Yeah.
I met Rory O'Connor of Rory Story Cubes.
The Rory of Rory Story Cubes. That's super cool.
So I went to the booth and I was talking to Anita, who we were talking about this thing called Extraordinaires, which I'm actually going to let you talk about because you've played around with it a little bit. And I was asking because with Rory Story Cubes, they're coming out with, I think the Adventure Time ones have already come out, but there's Looney Tunes Story Cubes coming out, Doctor Who Story Cubes coming out.
Yeah, a whole bunch of new licensed theme ones and a few that are not licensed stuff, but just right.
There's a new one that's like fantasy
yeah.
stuff. But anyway, so I was like, oh, you know, cool. I didn't realize there's new stuff coming out. She's like, oh yeah, let me grab one of the guys over there to kind of show it to you. And she's like, hey, come here. And she grabs this guy and he comes over and he's like, how you doing? I'm Rory. I'm like, oh, hey, nice to meet you, Rory. Holy crap, you're Rory! And he's like, oh, yes, I am. So I have a picture with Rory.
Yay!
Which is awesome.
Thank you, Rory.
So yeah, so there's a bunch of new Rory Story Cubes coming out, and GameRite is actually publishing Story Cubes in little collections of three.
I saw that on the GameRite site, yep. Yeah.
So if, you know, if they call it like the mix, you know, Story Cube mix.
Yeah, they're going for the collect them all feeling.
So that's kind of neat if you kind of want a sampling of something like we should get that for the verbs. Just get like three verb dice.
Yeah.
Cause we don't really need a full set of them. But so the Creativity Hub is kind of the parent company that owns Rory Story Cubes and this thing called the Extraordinaires.
So like they own the rights for Rory Story Cubes?
Yeah, they distribute it internationally.
Okay.
Well, they're the designer.
It's him. Like it's yeah. him. Right. So, yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. So Anita, Rory and Anita are, like, married. They've also released this thing called The Extraordinaires. And so we have something called upstairs called The Extraordinaires Design Studio.
Yeah. So we haven't tried it out, but we've looked at it. Extraordinaires,
we've been making plans.
Yeah. Extraordinaires Design Studio, the idea here is that you have these different people... characters, whatever, so called the Extraordinaires
are different extraordinary characters.
I saw a ninja,
fairy, ninja, leprechaun, wizard, yeah. stuff like that. I mean, that's the idea. Like mostly
fantastic characters,
fantastic humanoid yeah. customers.
So yeah, well, for the design studio, they're your customers, and they're asking for a specific kind of product. Mm-hmm. So a light source or a
Something to carry your food in.
Something to carry food in.
Something to wash yourself with. Sure. One of those kinds of things.
So the idea behind the Extraordinaire's Design Studio is that you basically receive a pairing of an extraordinaire and a design request.
Right. It's an order.
And then you start kind of working through, okay, you know, well, I need to design this thing. What kind of other things does this extraordinaire like to do? Or how do they spend their time? You can kind of do research and say, well, then how would that affect this thing that they want?
Right.
We were looking at one and we said a ninja with a light source.
Right. Could use like glow sticks because he's got... So one of the things is, so there's an extraordinaire's card. On the front, it's like it's a full 5x7 picture of the extraordinaire. If you flip it over, there's a bunch of different pictures of like the extraordinaire in everyday life and the kinds of things that they do. And for the ninja, one of the things on the back is that he's got this like cloth rollout thing with all of his supplies.
A little tool belt sort of idea. Yeah. So we were just talking through this and not trying to draw stuff and and design it, but like, well, would glow sticks be helpful? Because those would be easy to stick in his toolkit, and they wouldn't be loud, and they wouldn't require batteries, and they wouldn't be heavy.
Right.
But they're one time use. But they're one time use, so maybe, you know, so maybe that's not so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I posited, well, ninjas spend a lot of time trying to be really stealthy in the dark. Maybe he would rather have something that will provide just enough light so he can see what he's doing, but preserve his night vision.
Mm-hmm.
So like a red light. And if he's really trying to be sneaky, then something that is very easy to either hide or to turn off.
Yep.
So
those are the kinds
of things
through
things like that.
Think through, and there's a bunch of cards that kind of help. They ask leading questions about how to consider this design and all this things.
Yep.
And the whole point of the Extraordinaire's Design Studio is to help people put themselves in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah. In this case, I think it's almost a double. It's doubly putting yourself in someone else's shoes, because part of it is trying to come up with what does this person need, but you're also putting yourself in the shoes of a product designer.
Right.
I mean, because it's really nice materials, and there's isometric graph paper that you can use to draw out your design. As someone who took a drafting class in high school, I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it seems really neat. I can't wait to get it in front of our kids and other kids and see how they react to it, because we think it's really cool.
Right. So we've got some plans with this. One thing we're going to do is like kind of paint night style, where we've got both kids sitting at opposite ends of the table, and we're going to have them take the same extraordinaire and the same
try to design the same thing,
and let them come up with their own individual designs.
Yes.
And see what they come up with, and they compare each other's results and talk about what they were able to do and what they weren't able to do, and then we can ask questions. And then we're going to do a group think with them, which will be fun. And then tomorrow I'm going to pitch running an art class at the kids' school.
All right. Fun.
So I'm really looking forward to it. They have a video on their website. They gave like 1,400 of these out to a bunch of public schools. And they have a video kind of like talking about some of the results of that. And I might have cried.
Aww.
I might have cried.
Aww.
It was really, you old softy. Really, really sweet. But I mean, like, we're in this climate right now where people do anything they can to not consider other people's perspective. And so I think something like this can
be really sometimes.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Sometimes?
A lot of the time.
All right. Anyway, moving on. I met a family that developed a game called Phone Fever.
Okay.
Okay. PHONEPHEVER. Phone Fever.
Okay. Clever.
And so the premise of this is that people in families tend to spend a lot of their lives with their noses in their phones.
Truth.
Right.
And unfortunately.
So, yep.
Yeah.
And so this is a board game / trivia game where instead of the board game being like, the whole point of this is so that you put your phones, you know, to the side.
Put your phone down and interact with each other. Sure.
Blah, blah, blah. This is a game that actually encourages phone use.
Use your phone and interact with each other.
Right.
Okay.
And so some of the like things that you have to do, maybe there's something that if you happen to be an expert of some obscure stuff, you would know the answer to. But some of the questions or requirements are just ridiculous. Like, find a valid number for a Loch Ness Monster reporting service.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a bunch of really, like some of the stuff that's in it is right. is really, you need to look stuff up. Like you're not gonna just know it off the top of your head.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool. And it's a family that self-published the game.
So they designed it, they published it. Yeah. They're the ones selling it now. Yeah. Cool.
Yep.
And designed for families.
And the poor person that was in the costume that was, you know, like how they have like the Lady Liberty person at tax time and all that stuff was their son. So it really was a family endeavor. And I just appreciated that. And the game, they sold out of their first printing. So good for them. And so they're on their second printing right now. And it's really cool. And it's kind of a unique idea.
Yeah, it is.
So I wanted to bring it
down. When you first mentioned this to me and said it's a game that uses your cell phone, all I could think of was a game a friend of ours had mentioned about a month or so ago now, which was like a charade style game that used your cell phone. You put the cell phone up on top of your head and it gave you know something, and everybody else is trying to give you clues.
Like a headband kind of thing?
Yeah. But this seems much more clever.
All right, moving on. So Hoyle was there. You know Hoyle, they make bicycle cards.
Yes, and have for
a bajillion years.
A millennia.
So they've kind of come to the realization that their brand is a little stale.
Maybe a little, yeah.
And so they actually brought together a group of educators and started out on this process of creating some original games that aren't wild departures from the kinds of things that Hoyle makes, but add some interesting new elements that maybe could be a little bit more helpful for kids. And there's a six pack of games that they've released. You buy the whole thing as a six pack. It's cheap. It's like $10, not even.
Okay.
Which is kind of like dedicated decks for things like Goldfish and stuff like that. And okay. War, you know, so.
Sure.
That's one thing that they have. They also have, there's a set of three games that they've released that all have, slightly different tactile, components to them.
Okay.
And
we looked at one of these.
Yep, and the games are all a little bit different. They do slightly different things. They actually gave us a set of the games to review.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be talking about those, and we played one of them.
Yes.
You want to talk about that?
So the one that we've had a chance to try so far was a game called Sharks Are Wild. It's a pretty simple sequencing game. I mean, this is, like you said, it's not a big departure from your standard simple card game. But the big difference, besides having some pretty decent cartoony but decent art,
I mean, the focus of the it's a game for like 5-year-olds. So.
Yeah, because it's basically a not a counting, but a greater than less than game. But the other thing is that when you win a hand or whatever, you get a token, and so they have a little box of these little gold coins you're taking from a treasure chest in the middle, and there's also other cards, the sharks, which are wild, will also let you pull tokens. So the goal of the game is to have the most tokens. It's mostly luck based, but it was a neat departure from your standard card game.
Right. And you know, it helps with rudimentary counting.
Yeah, we need to try it some with our two younger children and see how they feel about it.
Mm-hmm. So that's what Hoyle's doing these days, and like I said, we're going to have a review on the site for this.
I mean, good for them for trying new stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Let's see. I only have a couple more.
I see the end of your notes in sight.
You see the end of the list. So I ran into these guys who were selling some accessories.
Okay.
It's not an actual game. But these guys that were selling this thing called the Card Caddy.
Yeah, you showed this to me. It's neat.
I like it a lot.
We really could have used it when we were on our trip to Colorado.
Yes.
So it's really simple. It's a carrying case for cards that then, when you take it apart, can snap back together as it holds your cards and is also the discard tray.
Yep.
Super simple, but...
And they chain together. Like, you could put, like,
sure.
a bunch of them together if you wanted to. So that,
But when we... couple of weeks ago when we went to Colorado, we ended up playing some card games in the airport, mostly Anomia.
Right.
And we ended up having to balance our draw and discard piles on top of a pile of luggage.
Right.
Which
was
It worked, okay.
Yeah, exactly. It worked, but there were no walls to kind of keep the piles together, so yeah. It was a little bit difficult. Like, with something like this, you just, I mean, first of all, it's probably holding the cards. About a deck and a half of standard playing cards.
Yeah.
So it's about the size of it, and then it just pulls apart, and then the two pieces clip together, and now you have a draw and a discard pile with maybe like inch and a half high walls.
Yeah.
And it's so that doesn't have to rest on a perfectly flat surface.
Yep.
And it just would have worked. It just would have made
it. It would have been easier to play.
Right. So that's kind of the primary card caddy. They have one that's like double high. So if you had a bigger deck of cards, you can do that. Also, they have some accessory pieces. So there's like a pegboard. So if you wanted to play cribbage or something, you could kind of snap that on top of one side.
For a teeny tiny little cribbage board?
Yeah, or something, you know, or you're just keeping score for whatever other reason. And there's a series of other things that are out there. So I would definitely recommend you check them out. I think we'll do a short review on the site for that because I think pictures will help.
Yeah.
And it's a good product.
Okay.
I'm not like high on Card Caddy, like I'm blown away by this ingenious thing and whatever, but it's a good product.
I would say in our core audience, this is, if you are looking for more tools to help you travel with games, this is, this should be on your list.
Card games.
Yeah.
And it does have a hole in the front so you can see what cards you have.
Also good.
Not like you have this kind of opaque shell and you have no idea what's inside.
Yeah.
Right? That was deliberate.
All right.
So... I think we'll throw, I mean, it'll be short, but I think we'll throw a review of those up on the site. And I bet you we could talk them into giving a couple away on the show.
That'd be neat. So, yeah.
All right. So I mentioned that where our booth, our Foxmine booth was situated, we had Mayfair right next to us.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of us, we had Twizmo Games.
All right. Never heard of them.
Yeah. They're a relatively small publisher, but I went over there to chat them up because they were our neighbors, you know.
Sure.
Good aisles. Be neighborly. Good neighbors. and they were showing a couple of games, but two of them that really piqued my interest. One of them was called Tac-Tac, and the other one was called Emoji Wars.
Okay.
Emoji Wars is it's basically a simplified version of Magic.
Magic the Gathering?
Magic the Gathering, right.
Okay.
But again, it's at a level that like our 8-year-old could play.
Okay.
Pretty straightforward. What's going on? It's a lot like Magic. The sort of the story is that we think of emojis now, but really emojis have been around for hundreds of years. And
okay.
Goofy stuff. But
sure.
It's a cute little game. I'm hoping that we can get a copy of that in for review so we can actually like really play it a lot.
Okay.
We didn't really have time to play it at the booth. And the other one is this game called Tac-Tac. This game is pretty interesting. So the initial setup of the game is a lot like checkers.
Okay.
Okay. But both sides have kind of a safe zone, which is the first three rows or so.
Okay.
And the purpose of the game is to get as many of your pieces into the other player's safe zone as possible because four of your pieces have 10s, four of your pieces have 20s, and four of your pieces have 30s on them.
Okay.
I think that's the right distribution. And as you move your pieces along, higher numbered pieces can jump on top of lower numbered pieces and kind of consume.
They stack up.
And what you can do with this is either you can take other players' pieces, mm-hmm. or you can jump on top of your own pieces to kind of get them
kinda,
out of the way of
and
other
kinda
stuff,
protect or protect them, yeah. them
or whatever. You can't then jump down, but that might not be a problem.
Sure.
And so basically the game continues. I don't remember what the end condition of the game is because I saw a lot of games this past weekend. but if you have any of your, when the game ends, you basically subtract points for any of your pieces that are still in your safe zone.
Okay.
And your opponent does the same, obviously.
And
then you add your pieces that are in the other opponent's safe zone to get
the other person's
score.
Safe zone. Okay.
So it's just kind of a neat sort of deep strategy. It's a lot. It's one of those games that's deeper.
Looks simple, but it's actually harder.
So that was a pretty interesting game with kind of rudimentary counting in it as well, but really it's more about the strategy, which I liked a lot. And the last thing on my list.
The last game!
Is from a publisher called Buffalo Games.
Okay.
Buffalo, I think the most well-known thing that they have released, at least that I recognized, was the watch your mouth. That was the thing with the clear
with the dental.
You have to try to say stuff, and people have to guess what it is. So that's them. Yeah, okay. So kind of some silly stuff that they do. But they're working. They just, I guess, signed a deal or inked a deal or whatever earlier this year with a design group, which is two ladies called Wanna Play, WANNAPLE apostrophe.
Wanna okay.
Play, right? It kind of looks French-ish.
Wanna Play.
Wanna Play. But the games that they're coming out with are... they're all designed to be fun family games, right? And so
all right.
Two of them are coming out later this year, Animal Act and Silly Street Puzzles. The one that they have out now, which is the only one that they had kind of out for, like they had boxes for the other ones, but the only one they had like really out for display is this game called Silly Street. And the whole point of this game is that you're doing goofy stuff. Like this is a game that is for me, right?
Sure.
For, you know... And so, you know, as you have to draw cards and you have to do the things that are on the cards in order to move down the street. And the first person to get to the end of the silly street first wins.
Okay.
The first person who gets to the end.
Yeah. I gotcha.
But the whole point is that you're trying to get kids to, you know, get up and moving and to be creative and to not be afraid of doing things in front of people.
Mm. Yeah, we have a child who's like that.
Right. So, example, here we go. Each player takes a turn drawing a card, following the hilarious instructions on the card, like singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat in a deep hippo voice or doing karate like a kangaroo.
Okay.
Or, like, you know, saying such and such like your dad. Or, you know, I mean, so it's stuff like that. Like, it's okay. Really designed for that kind of goofy family atmosphere.
Gotcha.
And I found it kind of endearing.
Yeah.
And kind of fun. And that's Buffalo Games. And their PR person... like left the week before Toy Fair to go work for the Buffalo Bills.
Oh,
so they didn't even have a PR person, but
hopefully they will.
Hopefully we'll put all that stuff together. And,
all right,
I might just reach out directly to the Wanna Play people.
Yeah,
because that would be a kind of a neat thing to talk about on the show as well.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's all I did.
Oh, is that all? You've been talking a mile a minute, and the show still ran super long. So I guess that's it for the show.
Yeah.
Finally.
I didn't do much, just a lot.
No.
But anyway, so we're going to wrap it up. Thank you once again for coming and listening to our show. Don't forget to check out all of the other awesome podcasts on the Dice Tower Network.
Yep. Especially The Portal.
Especially The Portal.
Hey.
Brant Sanderson.
Scott Nordine, contact us.
Yes. Please reach out to us in any of the various ways that we are about to list.
Yes. How about Facebook?
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA. How about Twitter?
@FamilyGamersAA.
How about email?
Anitra, ANITRA, @TheFamilyGamers.com or
Andrew @TheFamilyGamers.com.
You can find us on iTunes.
Yes.
The Family Gamers Podcast. The Family Gamers
Podcast. Do a search for that. It'll come right up. Then you're going to go in there and you're going to type up a sweet 5-star review. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And then you're going to check out our website at TheFamilyGamers.com.
That's true.
And any and all of those places are places to reach us. You can comment on posts on Facebook. You can send us direct messages on Facebook. Comment on posts on the Family Gamers Network.
You can.
And that's going to be it for us this week. But until next time,
play games with your kids.